So, what's trending? Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio.
Welcome, welcome to Trending with Timory. My name is Brooke Taylor, filling in, honored to guest host for today. Happy to be with you. I think it was last month that I joined Timory to discuss the topic of marriage, but also maintaining a strong union after a diagnosis of a disability. That's part of my story. And since this is my first time guest hosting, and by the way, we have a phenomenal guest and show and theme for you today, I just wanted to offer a brief little introduction as we jump in. So by trade, I am a radio personality, a podcast host, a pilgrimage leader, and a Catholic speaker and writer. And one of the markets that I worked in many years ago and lived was Green Bay, Wisconsin. So I want to shout out to AM 1050 WJOK. I actually remember when Relevant Radio went on the air in that market. But most importantly, I am a wife and a mom of five. We have four sons and a daughter, and our daughter is adopted from Poland and she has autism. And so that was the diagnosis. After a lot of years in media and building a career, I left that to come home and to take care of my family, especially after receiving something that was life-altering, that diagnosis. And sometimes those moments come when you know that life as you knew it will never be the same. And that's what happened in our situation. And I think if you live long enough, or if you go through something cataclysmic, sometimes it feels like you have lived multiple lives. Or if you have a great reversion or conversion, you look at that with the lives of the saints. It's extraordinary that one soul can live so many different experiences. And it's a blessing. It's been an interesting contrast. So instead now of this glamorous career that I used to have and kind of rubbing shoulders with the powerful, many days I just feel very powerless to alleviate some of my daughter's challenges. And, you know, it's not just my daughters. It's raising all kids, I think, especially in times like this, raising teenage sons and in a culture that is, I think, hostile to our faith and increasingly foreign to me. And so now, instead of making my living surrounded by words, and that's another interesting aspect of that was my currency. It was words. It was communication. Now my daughter, she's 11, mostly nonverbal. So most of what I do is met by silence. And so I share that because it has been the classroom for me, the greatest gift. And I think of Saint Therese of Lisieux, that we must first become little, and that is where greatness is found. And our daughter Carolina was in an orphanage for the first 11 months of her life. And through being open to life, through the call of adoption, the gift of adoption, she has been our greatest teacher in ways that I never imagined. And I always say that Viktor Frankl quote, Man's Search for Meaning, and that fantastic psychologist that he was, he says, everything can be taken from a man but one thing, the last of the human freedoms, and that is to choose our attitude in any given set of circumstances, to choose one's own way. And there, again, are so many references in sacred scripture, in the lives of the saints, that speak to that. And Mother Teresa of Calcutta. So that beautiful gift, and I look at my daughter as that exemplar. And I often find that the greatest teachers sometimes are the ones that the world overlooks, the cloistered contemplatives, the quiet elderly man always at church. And that is a little bit of the road that we will travel on today's show, appearance versus reality, and the freedom that comes from embracing littleness and realness. And that's a big theme in Shakespeare's Hamlet. I'm a big fan of Shakespeare. And so appearance versus reality comes up a lot in Hamlet, right in the beginning scene and right in Act One, where Gertrude, Hamlet's mother, asks Hamlet why his father's death seems to be affecting him so much. I mean, it's his father, but you know the story. And so Hamlet replies, "Seems, madam. Nay, it is. I know not seems." And I think about that a lot, even though it was written in, you know, so long ago, I think the 1600s, Hamlet was 1600. I think that the crisis we have in poor media reporting, fake news, the smoke and mirrors of social media, there's so much illusion that we have to sort through. And so once again, going back, and that's been our classroom, the Sermon of the Disabled. Our daughter has autism, but there's also an intellectual disability, global developmental delays. And so the realness is inescapable. And sometimes it's very difficult and painful, but that is where great growth and great beauty and resurrection is found. It's in the deep and all pointing back to Jesus and the paradox of the cross and the precious things that are worth fighting for, like the family. And so that is our theme today, Fatima, feminism, and the family, all relating as we celebrate and all day here on Relevant Radio, the beautiful stories, the testimonials, the witness, the fruit of Our Lady of Fatima, as we celebrate today, October 13th, 1917 was the day in history, the miracle of the sun that happened, Fatima, Portugal. And I love reliving the story. I'm reading, there's a little book that's quite well known about Our Lady of Fatima. And I think it's called Our Lady Comes to Fatima. And I've been reading all of my children. I've read that too. And now my youngest, Gus, I'm reading that to him and we're almost done. So when it lines up liturgically, you know that's always exciting. But we know the story. Estimates are between 50 and 70,000 people gathered, and not just superstitious peasants, but there were people of all kinds. And there were even Freemasons and socialists and unbelievers. And not only did they witness what scientists would call a preternatural event, but people outside the area, outside of the Cova area, they saw it too. So journalists wrote about it. And for the skeptics, you can look it up. And that's what I love. I love when you're able to invite something into someone, into a mystery of our faith, and they understand. And this beautiful flame is lit. And then, of course, the fruits from Fatima, I think, are indisputable and innumerable. So Our Lady of Fatima says this. This is a prophetic message that was from Our Lady of Fatima, and she proclaims the final battle between the Lord and the kingdom of Satan will be about marriage and the family. Do not be afraid, because anyone who works for the sanctity of marriage and the family will always be fought and opposed in every way, because this is the decisive issue. However, Our Lady has already crushed his head. And that leads me to our guest on Trending today, because she has been the boots on the ground when it comes to the battle of the family. And it comes from a place of personal experience and lifelong study. And we'll get into that as well. Lila Marie Lawler was dedicated to secular humanism and feminism, growing up as an only child of divorced parents, among the brightest intellectual minds at Princeton. If you ever get to watch The Journey Home with Lila Lawler, I highly recommend it, because she goes through her entire bio. And then after years of being immersed in secularism, in radical feminism, she did the unthinkable and she became Catholic and embraced her vocation as wife and mother. So today, Lila Marie Lawler is a wife and mom of seven and grandchildren of many. Of course, she's a wife of one, the Philip Lawler, and she is also the author of The Little Oratory, God Has No Grandchildren, which is a book that we will talk about today on Trending, and her new three-volume work, The Summa Domestica, How to Make a Home, Raise Your Children, and Preserve the Collective Memory. And we're also going to get into what is the collective memory and expound on that. Welcome now to the show, Lila Lawler. Welcome.
Thank you so much, Brooke. I'm so happy to be here.
It's
mutual. I'm gonna correct one little thing in your bio of me, just for the sake of the record. I lived in Princeton, New Jersey, and I went to Princeton High School, and okay. I actually went to college at Swarthmore College, which is another small elite college. And after I got married, after my freshman year, I transferred to Georgetown University. So, I did take some classes at Princeton, and the chaplain, the dean of the chapel of Princeton, actually is the one who baptized me, and that is another story, which I won't go into right now. But he was an amazing survivor of the Japanese prison of war camps in World War II. So that was that. I do have ties to Princeton. But I actually went to Swarthmore.
Okay.
So, but just to let you know that.
Kind of around the world of intelligentsia. I mean, that was your circle.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you talked about that priest in on the journey home. So I'm wanting to point and encourage people to watch that because the story is extraordinary. But also your family. It's fascinating because your dad, your father was Muslim, but he very, I mean, we're talking a little bit about feminism here. He very much believed in women's liberation from traditional roles. So although he, you know, practiced the Islamic tradition, he felt women should work. They should be out there.
So he was not any sort of practicing Muslim. His cultural background was Muslim, and he was an engineer. He was a professor of engineering. He had left Egypt to work in Hungary during the time of the communist rule, and he had observed that situation very acutely and had determined that he needed to leave there. He was working for the Egyptian government, and then he left. He went to London briefly, and then he came to the U.S. to study and got his master's at Ohio State in 1 year, a master's in engineering, which is unthinkable, especially for somebody for whom English is not their first language, and then went to Cornell and got his PhD there. And then he taught at North Carolina State University for his most of his career. So he considered himself to be, he was very widely read. He was by no means just a, you know, a sort of mathematics person. He considered himself to be cultural, a world traveler. He thought of himself, and he told me that he was a free thinker, which of course doesn't mean thinking freely. It means rejecting religion. And, he above all thought that religion was superstitious, including Islam. He thought that that was superstitious. So, so he definitely for me represented, he held academic life in the highest regard. He thought that I should definitely pursue any and all higher degrees. And his probably his greatest hope for me was that I would also become a professor. And yeah, and I thought that that's what I would do too.
And these were the days where it was kind of the pioneering class of feminists when Gloria Steinem was burning her bra and in that kind of generation. And so...
Yeah, so that was going on. But of course, feminists often lie about history. This is something that we need to really internalize. Gertrude Hemelfarb actually wrote a very good essay that's in First Things about this. They are actually committed to rewriting history to fit their narrative. The fact is that when my father arrived here in the 50s, in the 1950s, he not only had that view of women's achievement, but back home in Egypt, the women he knew had all gone to college. And after he divorced my mother, he married a woman who had her degree. I mean, this is in 1963. She had her degree in economics, and he once told me, you know, she has her degree, and even though she's, you know, home with the children, they went on to have two children, she, you know, she had her degree, and that's very important. So feminists do not tell the truth about what was going on in society at that time.
Did you consider yourself a feminist, just being caught up in that wave of the environment that you were in?
Oh, yes. I mean, for sure. Because so, you know, women had been achieving, and certainly in the, you know, I lived in a very progressive city, and girls were always told, you know, you should go and achieve everything. You can do whatever boys can do. And feminism, as you say, was becoming like, definitely this radical expression. And, you know, that was the time in the early 70s, Ms. Magazine began to be published. And somehow, I don't know how, I just subscribed to that. I mean, I was 12 or 13. I don't know how I had a subscription to that magazine, but I guess at the time I was 15 and I got a subscription somehow, and I devoured everything in it. And I definitely agreed with everything. It's definitely someone who thought that abortion was a woman's right. And I guess it was very schizophrenic because, you know, my childhood had been very unhappy as an only child of divorced parents. I was very lonely. I read all sorts of literature that was certainly very traditional and beautiful, and I loved and honored all the visions that it afforded. But somehow I was also caught up, because there is something romantic about being a revolutionary, and I was caught up in that as well. It was completely schizophrenic and mirrored the emotional turmoil that I and so many people around me were caught up in. I mean, there is such a thing as mass hysteria and mental mm-hmm. illness. And I think that that's in the last century and continues this day. So yes, in some ways, I definitely was feminist. And I the main issue being that I thought that abortion was a woman's right. I was also taught by my mother, who later totally repented of all of this, that sex should be free and that people should just express themselves sexually and that contraception was the responsible thing to use. And I mean, I was just a kid, and but those were my views. And it's very interesting, because it's when I met my husband, who's 10 years older than I am, and we met because he and my mother worked in the same place. And I once, was spouting off about abortion, and he just looked at me and he was like, "Well, yeah, but it's wrong." And he wouldn't argue with me. He just said, "It's wrong." And that alone just changed my mind.
It sounds like up until that point, those views were dispensed from figures of authority in your life and reinforced by the culture at the time with Ms. Magazine, which now you think of the culture we're living in now. And that's why it's so important to speak. So it only took one person to stop and confront you to critically think about that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he just, at the time I was also doing reading that was opening my mind to Christianity, which I had never encountered, but other than through literature. And when he said that, something did awaken in my conscience. And it wasn't even about abortion. It was about things in general, being able to be right or wrong. And that in itself was something that I had never encountered, because everything in my milieu was about your feelings and how you felt about things. So it definitely was a relativist. There's no question about mm-hmm. it, like as an emotional relativist. And that is what, many people are relativists because they were raised to be absolutists, to believe that there is objective. And then intellectually, somehow that got destabilized. And so intellectually they came around to being relativists and to asserting that truth is something that can be determined within the person, but in their lives, they still live as if there's objective truth and the Ten Commandments, and they still are decent people. And then they just teach the wrong philosophy, but they themselves live according to the right philosophy. I was the opposite. So I was the recipient of this teaching, and I internalized it. And I lived in a way that was totally dependent on my feelings, and I had no one to really correct me on that. And then there's nowhere to go from there, because there's nothing, there's no ground where you can at least act in a way that is in accord with there being a right and a wrong. So that was truly a wake-up call for me to encounter someone who not only lived this way, but was willing to confront someone with it and to say, no, there's right and there's wrong.
Well, and that takes us to what is truth, objective truth. And my name is Brooke Taylor, filling in for Timmerie. We would love to hear from you. Want to call 1-888-914-9149 is the number. Our guest is Lila Marie Lawler. And at the top of the show, I shared that prophetic warning from Our Lady of Fatima that the final battle will be about marriage and the family. And we have seen this play out with devastating accuracy since that was first proclaimed in 1917. It brings me to Pope Pius XI, the letter to the world about marriage and family. He writes this in 1930, Casti Canubi, which is nearly now a century old. And you acknowledge that because that is the theme of your book. It's called God Has No Grandchildren, Casti Canubi, a guided reading of Pope Pius XI. Encyclical on chaste marriage. And we just have a few minutes before the break, but I want to read this quote and then we'll get into the meat of it. You say in the book, Casti Canubi might possibly be considered the most retrograde, dusty, and shockingly old-fashioned bit of unwanted advice ever to be foisted on a mocking world. So if that's the case, why bring it out now? And I know that we're up against a break, but it sounds to me it goes all the way back to that root. What is truth?
Mm-hmm. Yes, for sure. And we can talk about that.
Yeah. And just quickly, I'm going to skim over the timeline because, again, this is 1930. So we're kind of looking at a map and a timeline. He pens this encyclical right when Margaret Sanger is saying the Catholic Church is the oppressor of women. What women need is contraception and abortion. That's happening in 1921, and she founds the American Birth Control League. Then in 1927, the U.S. Supreme Court upholds laws dating compulsory sterilization. In 1930, the Anglican, the Lambeth Conference, accepts contraception. And in that same year, December 31st, 1930, Pope Pius XI issues Casti Canubi. And I'll also reference, and we can get into this after the break when we come back, is Vladimir Lenin and Marxism is also in full bloom at this time. So you see the concurring things, the parallels happening. And we're going to get into that, this map of the structures that once upheld the family beginning to be undermined and why the timing of Holy Father's promulgation of this document was so providential. We will for that when we come back. My name is Brooke Taylor, filling in for Timmery. Our guest is Lila Marie Lawler. We'll pick that up right after the break. Stay with us.
So, what's trending? Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timmery on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Welcome back to Trending. My name is Brooke Taylor, filling in for Timmery today. Happy to join you and delighted to be with Lila Marie Lawler, our guest. She is the author of God Has No Grandchildren and an upcoming 3-volume work, The Summa Domestica. I hope we can get to that as well. Our topic is Fatima, feminism, and the family. And there's so much critical content. I want to get to the opening pages of the book, God Has No Grandchildren. It is a guided reading of Pope Pius XI's encyclical, Casti Canubi, on chaste marriage. Though it was written in 1930, the wisdom is so important, essential for a time such as this. And Layla, we are getting to that, just starting to unpack the timeline. But I think it's really important, especially after hearing your own story, your own background. You mentioned being confronted with a statement when Philip Lawler, who you would then go on to marry for the first time, said to you, abortion is wrong, and being confronted with that. And we just received a call that I want to go to now from Margaret in Chicago, and maybe you could address that. She said, I am married to someone who thinks abortion is a woman's right. And I think Margaret is here on the line to explain. Are you there, Margaret?
Yes. Hello.
Hi there.
How are you?
So yeah, this is your husband.
Yeah, we've been married a long time, and he has come out to say, no, I don't believe it's, I think it's okay. I think that a woman has a right to choose, and it's just shocking to me. I've done marches for right to life. I've always been against abortion, so I'm just shocked, and I don't know how to handle that. Like, how do
Margaret, did your husband have a paradigm shift, or was this something that he's always held?
I don't know what he held it before. He never really talked about it. It was not like he came out so strongly about it. But I would say yes, a little bit of a paradigm shift. But we go to church together. We pray together. I'm just shocked.
That is shocking. I can imagine you being shocking. You're being shocked about that. And all I can say to you is that I think it's very important when with spouses to delve beneath the sort of surface issue that comes up, and not to look at things, you know, when you have friends or acquaintances, you might argue with them, and you probably aren't as argumentative a person as I am, but you know, it's certainly tempting to say, but what about this? And certainly, you know, there's a topic where there are a lot of arguments on both sides. Of course, the ones on the side of life are much better and are true. But with spouses, I think it's better to try to see why the person is saying this. And there can be so many reasons, but we probably don't have time to go into them. Sometimes I think with husbands, they are somewhat challenging their wives without saying it in so many words, to say to them in a way, their attitude underneath the words is, do you respect me? Usually the problems between husbands and wives are about the husband not feeling respected and the wife not feeling loved. And where the husband doesn't feel respected, I think sometimes the wife is wisest to show him respect, to ask him questions, and maybe to pray and think about that there's something, you know, I think with abortion, a lot of times people have a bad conscience is one problem. So many of us have just personal experiences with abortion one way or another, this either being directly implicated in it or, you know, just one or two degrees of separation. So sometimes there's a conscience issue that is coming to the fore, and that's an intimate thing with the person's soul that one cannot really meddle with, but you, as his spouse, you can help him, and you can help him with your prayer and love. And also I would say to just be very careful about where you go to church, because unfortunately some churches, Catholic churches, are not being strong about these things. I'm not saying that I think a pastor should preach about abortion from the pulpit. I actually don't think he should, because I don't think little children should be introduced to this topic. And I think it's terrible for parents to have to be in the car answering questions about what abortion is to five-year-olds. But the pastor can, if he's clever, he can definitely get his message. And in a church where that is not happening, or where there is some creeping progressivism, leftism, I think it's important just to say, like, what do you think about this? Maybe we're not in the right church. I don't know. We have to help each other. Spouses have to help each other. And to me, this is a sign of some deep-seated thing that might not even be related to abortion. And maybe it's just some sort of problem that he's having right now with feeling like, am I really the leader here? Does she respect me? There are just so many things that it could be. I think that maybe talking about it with the priest, if you trust him, would be a good way to go, but definitely not to argue about it. One thing that I really appreciated about my new friend, soon after a few years to become my husband, was that he did not argue with me. He just said, it's wrong. That's all he said. And I kind of tried to bait him a little bit, and he just wouldn't argue.
I also would recommend perhaps purchasing God Has No Grandchildren and doing a study as a couple, because I do think so much of the issue of abortion, but also so many other cultural ills and ailments are addressed in this encyclical Casti Canubi. And it is a guided reading, and I think it's kind of a forgotten treasure. And in my heart goes out to Margaret, because it's a grief. It's a grief.
Oh, yeah.
And so this goes to the general idea of moral relativism. And we would never dare assert that the gospel is mistaken, that if we're Catholic, that church teaching is mistaken. And so there, you know, is a lot there to unpack. But I also want to take this to something I was thinking about when I was reading this encyclical. I was reading this book and I saw a headline this was in the news, about actor Will Smith. And he was interviewed about his own marriage. So we're going to go into marriage with Jada Pinkett Smith. But it all goes together. It's chaste, it's purity, it's life, it's family. And he was disclosing that both have had extramarital affairs. And he talks about this. I want to read a quote. This is an actual quote from the conversation. He said, "There were significant discussions about what is relational perfection." This is actor Will Smith. He said, "What is the perfect way to interact as a couple? For the large part of our relationship, monogamy was what we chose, not thinking that monogamy was the only relational perfection." He continued, "We have given each other trust and freedom with the belief that everybody has to find their own way, and marriage for us can't be a prison. And the experiences that the freedoms that we've given one another and the unconditional support to me is the highest definition of love," end quote. And that's just one example. And they're not Catholic, well, so I should
right, offer that but at the same but, time, at the same time, marriage throughout history has had these certain attributes and has been known to have these attributes. And one of them is fidelity. And a not Catholic who are not can have a valid marriage if they are simply open to having children, if God sends them to children and to have children, sends them children, and if they have the purpose of being faithful to each other. Because fidelity is clearly, first of all, a divine attribute and something that as human beings, as persons, we would want to imitate God in this. It's a virtue, it's an honor, and it's something that, you know, if you're talking about relational aspects, this would be, I can't even imagine anything more important than in any relationship that you be faithful. And I mean, in appropriate to the relationship, you know, whether it's friends or work partners or what have you, that appropriate to that relationship, you will be faithful in. And, you know, for in some relationships, it's not a matter of being of lifelong, but because marriage is about having children, it has to be lifelong, because that is what it means to take care of children, that you offer them stability and security. So what Will Smith is saying there, it's something that he made up. It's not an attribute of marriage, and therefore it cannot be something that you decide about marriage any more than you could say marriage is like jumping out of an airplane. It just isn't. That's just not what it is.
But this is what's so challenging, is that it has become, there's such a dislocation between the covenant of marriage and the idea what marriage is. There's so many iterations now that we're seeing in our culture. And so how can we reclaim the truth of what marriage is? There's in Casti Canubi, and you write about this, number 23, and Pope Pius XI, he says, "For matrimonial faith demands that husband and wife be joined in an especially holy and pure love, not as adulterers love each other, but as Christ loved the church." And I think right there is the answer.
Right. Absolutely. I think the way that we as Christians can restore the good of marriage to our culture and to the world is by living the good of marriage. We have to be faithful in our marriages. We have to encourage other people to be faithful. Unfortunately, we have come to a point where Christians, Catholics, will accept that a marriage that of their friends, of their relatives, is falling apart. And they'll say, well, to themselves, they'll say, well, there's nothing I can really do. And to the persons, they will say, well, you have to do what's right for you. And that is simply cowardice. You know that it's not a good thing. And so you just simply have to not only say it's not a good thing, but also say, I will help you. We will help you. What do you need? We're on the team of your marriage. We're not on one person's side or the other person's side. We're on the side of your family, of your marriage, of your children. We're here to help. We'll do whatever it takes. And marriages have been saved by people doing that.
I want to, I'm just looking here. It looks like we have a call from Dawn in Florida. We're working our way through. My name is Brooke Taylor, in for Timmery on Trending, and joined by Layla Marie Lawler. Working our way through God Has No Grandchildren, a guided reading of Pius XI's Cassie Canubi on Chaste Marriage. And so the theme today is Fatima. We are talking about feminism, and we're talking about the family. We have just a few minutes before we go to break. I think we can sneak Dawn in. Are you there, Dawn?
I am. Thank you so much.
You have a question about a niece, and if you should attend a wedding.
Yes, I do. And it's in an Episcopal church. And I come to find out when I was looking at the website that front and center on the website, on the first page, a deacon in the church is saying that he's happily married to his husband, and that he's a very big supporter of the LGBTQT alphabet soup, groups out there. And
that's an Episcopal
really
church, you said?
Yes. So it took me by surprise because I want to be very supportive of my niece. But I feel...
And is she Catholic or is she Episcopalian?
She is of no denomination. I know that her primary complaint of the Catholic Church, at least what she shared with me, and this was some time ago, was she shared with me that she doesn't like the fact that Catholics don't allow, female priests. And, I allowed her conversation, and then, we've had just only minor conversations with it. My sister, that's her mother, is not a practicing Catholic, but my other two siblings and I are practicing Catholics, and she knows that we're fairly strong and thankful. I'm very thankful to Relevant Radio for helping me to build my faith. And it's interesting that I call you all, especially because I'm just in tears sometimes about this topic with my niece, because I want to love her. I want to guide her, but I'm not sure how to proceed, mainly because I've been given, especially by your radio station, three sort of gentle, probes from God. It's almost like God was preparing me for this, to find this information out. Because I've heard three different conversations on your radio station, and the advice given to them was to not go to or not attend a wedding in a setting such that would be, definitely inappropriate,
Right. Layla, I'm just going to give you a few minutes to respond. Thank you for sharing that, Dawn. And there's so many relatable things to what you said. I know very few of us that have not had a family member with, you're struggling with these really tough decisions. And Layla, I know that you kind of counsel and share about this on your blog a lot. We just have a few minutes. Maybe we can cover it after the break. But any immediate thoughts on your end, Layla?
Well, I think that it's hard to talk to a specific situation like this one. I think it would be important to consult. Hopefully there is a priest who knows the family, because a lot depends on whether the niece is actually Catholic, because if a Catholic marries outside of the Catholic Church, their marriage will actually not be valid. And so canonically speaking, and you are a witness when you go to the wedding, you are a witness. Your presence there means that you witness with your person that what the people are doing is true. And if that is the case, you cannot actually be a witness to that. If there are cases where the person is not Catholic, and in those cases, perhaps you could, it's a tricky situation. After the break.
Yep. We'll revisit after the break again. Dawn, bless you. Thank you. And we will be right back. Let's pause there. Our guest, Layla Lawler. My name is Brooke Taylor, in for Timmery. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio Line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/forester.
bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Welcome back to Trending. My name is Brooke Taylor, filling in for Timory today. Happy to join you and delighted to be with Lila Marie Lawler, our guest. She is the author of God Has No Grandchildren, also The Little Oratory, and a new 3-volume work, The Summa Domestica. Our theme is Fatima, Feminism, and the Family today. And there's a lot of confusion in our culture, models of what holy masculinity is not and what feminine genius is not. But then we have these astonishing models of what holy masculinity is and feminism is, true feminism, in Our Lady and in Our Lord and the Holy Family, in Saint Joseph. And in our laundry room is a picture of the Polish Madonna, an image, a painting. You may know exactly the one where Our Lady is doing the laundry and Our Lord, as a baby, a toddler, is on the ground below her as she's hanging a towel on the line. And it is a depiction of the most important woman who ever lived doing the laundry. That homemaking is holy work, and there is no drudgery there. It feels like it. Sometimes it's difficult. We can acknowledge that. But to be a craftsman of the home is a noble and beautiful calling, and it is a radical rebellion in the times which we live. So I want to, in the last 10 minutes that we have of the show, focus on that, to embrace our vocation. And Lila, you have a 3-volume work that I have talked about on the mountaintops and to whoever will listen, because I'm so excited about this. It's called The Summa Domestica. I know I've already pre-ordered it. It's not quite out now, but tell us why you decided this work, this 3-volume series.
Well, the series decided on me. Here's what happened. I started blogging about 12 years ago, saying to myself, well, I could just put some things on here that were would kind of be like the rough draft of some book that maybe someday I would write. And then 12 years, well, actually, I started putting it all together maybe about 4 years ago to just try to make some sense out of all of this material that I ended up putting on my blog about every aspect of life in the home. And it all started because I wanted to put on out there my thoughts about what one needs to educate one's children, because, you know, I get, as all mothers who've been homeschooling for, if you've been homeschooling for 0.8 years, you'll have calls from people saying, just tell me how to homeschool. And then, you know, if you homeschool a little longer, you start to actually get your theories. And I had some thoughts about the importance of the environment of the home, the importance of dedicating oneself to the home, and why it's the mother who does that, and runs the home and keeps the home, and the beauties of home, and how, you know, that as one can read in the encyclical Casti Canubi about marriage, the home is such an essential, it's one of the three societies that we have in our world, the church, the state, and the home, the family. And the custodian of the family and the home is the mother. And this is just a tremendous vocation, and it requires know-how. It requires competence. And I'm just one of those people who likes to tell people exactly what to do. And so blogging is the perfect outlet for me.
That is so perfect, because it's one of my favorite phrases you say. It's not perfection, it's competence. And so what you're offering is not some idea. Earlier at the top of the show, we were talking about appearance versus reality, illusion versus reality. Mm-hmm. This is real. It's competence, but the beauty in the little way and in the ordinary.
And the thing about blogs is, in general, blogs and on social media that have to do with homemaking, a lot of them are monetized somehow. So they are somewhat peddling perfection. There's things going on behind the scenes that people are not really necessarily aware of. And for actual people trying to find ways to do things and trying to find hope and guidance, this can be defeating. It can be demoralizing, because you don't quite realize that what you're seeing is not real. I've never monetized anything on the blog, other than if there's a link to Amazon, I do get a few pennies if somebody buys through my Amazon link. Other than that, I've never monetized anything. And so I've never, there aren't people, on the contrary, I wish I had people to come and spruce things up for me, but instead I'm doing it all myself. And when I put things out, I mean, when my children were here, they did a lot. And, you know, that was something I liked to share as well, because when my children decided that my kitchen or my hall needed to be painted, they just did it. And that is part of what the mother and the father impart in the home. But the idea behind what I do when I show my weeds or my kitchen with its formica countertops is to just say, if I can do this, you can do it too. And you can be a mother in the home. You can have a hidden life. You can be someone simple and practical, or you might even be from a more intellectual background. You might have been told that you have great gifts to give the world and the world needs you out there. And, you know, I think that's probably something I missed early on, but God gave me the grace to see that nothing was more important than me being home with my children. My children needed me. My husband needed me to be home. And this hidden life turns out to be very powerful. And most things that are important do come to fruition after a long time. You don't necessarily get immediate results. And I think it's important for women to recover some sense of this and to be willing to commit to it.
Amen. And that it's so important to embrace the sacrament of the moment. And we see the shiny, exciting moments of power and glory. But it's truly, as I was, you know, talking again at the top of the show about having a large family and kind of withdrawing from the career after we had a diagnosis and a disability. And it's that moment where that child has struggled and they catch a concept, or you know that they just lost a tooth. And it's the simple sacrament of the moments where your child actually notices that you folded their laundry, or, you know, they pick something up at the step. And in the lie of feminism, because that's what you talked about, and we know that is a deception, a radical feminism, that you are held down by the drudgery. It's actually not. It's so beautiful.
It is a deception of, I have to say, it is a deception of feminism, pure and simple. Feminism is an ideology of equality, and equality is inimical to Christianity. Our Lord Jesus Christ did not deem equality something to be grasped at, we are told in Scripture. Equality is, it is a poison that creeps into the person's soul and creates bitterness and opposition. We were put on this earth by God to cooperate with each other, not to compete with each other. Feminism is an ideology of non-cooperation. It's as simple as that. Feminism is a poison, and it has poisoned and harmed and killed millions of people. There are millions of unborn children who have died on the altar of feminism. And somehow we have to realize this. We have to open our eyes and we have to see that equality is not a good way of looking at life. And when we just let go of that, men and women just let go of equality as an ideology, we can then be at peace with our task, which is the will of God that is before us every day. We just get up and do our tasks. And we can have dreams, we can have creativity, we can have wonderful thoughts and passions, and all of those things can be at the service of others. And we can find that we enjoy things, that we are much happier and more contented. All of these ideologies that are based on equality have created a great amount of discontent and bitterness. And we need to somehow escape from that to what is true and real.
And to claim and live Mary's Magnificat. Lila Marie Lawler, check out Lila at Despite Them, a very popular newsletter. Also the book, God Has No Grandchildren, the Summa Domestica. My name is Brooke Taylor, filling in for Timmery. To be with you, you can connect with me on social media at brooketaylor.us and via my show, The Brooke Taylor Show. God